Poddo.
The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability. This doesn't seem to look like certainty and stability.
Welcome to Polling Politics.
Hello, and welcome to another special edition of Polling Politics. We're looking at various different aspects of what we're calling, and very few other people are calling, Super Thursday, the upcoming range of elections taking place this Thursday. We're going to look today at the Hartlepool by-election specifically. I'm joined by Sienna Rogers from Labour List. Hartlepool's attracted a lot of attention, but there's been relatively little polling conducted in the area. Constituency polls are always difficult to do at the best of times because they're such a narrow region. We have, however, had two polls in Hartlepool, both of which have put the Conservatives well ahead. Now, there's questions about the methodology, and there's always a margin of error associated with these things, but I think we can safely conclude that it's the Conservatives who are favourites, not least because Boris Johnson has now made an unprecedented three trips up there just in the time that he's been campaigning. Sienna, in many ways, the Hartlepool by-election is the most interesting part of Super Thursday. Would you say that Labour are in real trouble if they lose, or could this be written off as something else?
I think Labour are in real trouble if they lose. I mean, we've heard a lot of briefings already from, you know, sources close to the leadership who say things like, well, this is a pandemic election and any incumbent government, we're seeing this in Scotland and Wales as well, has a huge benefit here, because they're overseeing the vaccine rollout. This vaccine bounce is going to be crucial. They're also saying, well, look, I mean, last time in 2019, yes, Labour held on to the seat, but it did have a split pro-Brexit vote because the Brexit party took all these votes from the Conservatives. And that's kind of being cited as a reason that Labour shouldn't win it this time. I think the problem with that is that Labour under Keir Starmer has not been acting as if those kind of seats are now out of reach. In fact, he's sort of made it his whole mission to win those exact seats, I mean, described sometimes as red wall, whether you agree with that label or not. And I think the fact that Brexit Party voters are breaking for the Tories, not Labour, is not something we definitely knew would happen. And it's actually the problem, not a justification. So I think that's why it's a very big problem for the Labour Party if that happens this week.
And so would you say that success in Hartlepool for Labour is defined simply in terms of victory or loss? They can't, if you like, talk their way out of it if they get close to the Conservatives. They have to win.
I think they have to win. And actually, I think there's an argument to say that they should win it by a fairly good margin. And I think that sounds unfair to a lot of people, a lot of Labour members who want to defend Keir Starmer. But I think the thing is, for any opposition party, if you just step back for a minute, to lose a seat to a government that has been in power for so long is terrible. And it's just, you know, that's indisputable. And if you're talking about Labour winning the next general election, which, as we know, could be actually much sooner than, you know, we think, it could be 2023, which means Keir Starmer doesn't have much time to prove himself to these kind of voters. You know, Labour has got to be winning Hartlepool. So I think that's why, actually, yeah, there's a good argument to be made that it needs to be winning this well and definitely winning.
It's been decades since a governing party has gained a seat in a by-election. And so this is obviously going to be very unusual if the Conservatives do win. But of course, it's very unusual circumstances at the moment, full stop. Obviously, the impact of COVID, the vaccine programme, is having an effect. But from your perspective, is there more to it than that in terms of the underlying motivations of voters in Hartlepool?
There's definitely more to it. I mean, I've been to Hartlepool and I spoke to as many people as I could in an afternoon and a morning. And I mean, the vaccine itself didn't actually come up. Nobody raised that. And of course, it does affect mood. So I totally accept that. But it didn't actually come up as a subject. The thing that did come up, proactively, people would just mention this, raise this, and you wouldn't even have to say the name or anything. They said, you know, that Tory mayor, Ben Houchen, I'm really impressed by him. I'm really impressed that he's got investment to this area. And yes, okay, maybe he's more focused on Middlesbrough or other places in the Tees Valley. But actually, this is a really good thing for Hartlepool. People were repeatedly raising that. And I think polling shows that in terms of the Tees Valley mayoral race, that's very much reflected in the kind of level of support that he's got. He's a bit of a rock star up there. And I think that's something that Labour probably didn't quite know when they thought it would be a great idea to have this by-election on May 6th at the same time as that mayoral race. So that's interesting. I think more broadly, Boris Johnson's biggest success has basically been to portray his government as entirely new and separate from the Tories of the last decade, even though he was actually a minister, you know, in the last government with Theresa May as prime minister. And I think that plays into the fact that it's combined with the fact that people in Hartlepool very much see Labour as the incumbent. They kept saying, we've been Labour for 40 years and we don't get the attention that we deserve. They don't see it, the fact that, well, we've had a Tory government for the last decade. So if you've voted Labour all your life and things aren't changing for your town, obviously you're going to consider the Tory, who's very much saying, vote for us and you'll get a lot of money.
And what if you were advising Keir Starmer, or indeed the Labour Party, on this? Having been up there, what would you advise Labour to be doing in order to maximise their chances of winning, not just in Hartlepool, but in other seats like this?
It might sound a bit wishy-washy, but I really think authenticity is absolutely key. I really enjoyed going to Hartlepool because the people are just really funny. It's a reminder to get out of London more, just because people are actually just much funnier, I think, out there. And about
funny, definitely.
I genuinely just really enjoyed their company while vox popping people and doorstepping and everything. And they kind of like, of the Prime Minister, of Boris Johnson, they'd say, like, you know, he's a very naughty boy, when you ask if they're kind of bothered by the sleaze stories. I mean, one person said to me, look, Keir Starmer, he's hopeless. I'm really disappointed in him. He didn't do anything without looking as to what other people are going to say. There was very much this feeling that Keir Starmer is constantly kind of trying to look both ways. And it did seem that people haven't connected with him. And obviously that's influenced by the fact that, you know, it's been COVID. He hasn't done speeches to rooms full of people. He hasn't had a proper conference yet. All of that sort of stuff is absolutely true. But I think often in media appearances, he slightly seems to be struggling from the Ed Miliband syndrome of just looking really uncomfortable, but not coming across as sure of himself. And I think that's what the Tories have at their disposal at the moment, is candidates who just seem like they've got that confidence. I think we're seeing that in Anas Sara as well, who's going down really well in Scotland.
And you mentioned candidates. Obviously, by-elections are weird and unusual in many different ways. But what influence do you think the selection of Paul Williams for Labour and Jill Mortimer for the Conservatives has had on the performance of their respective parties in Hartlepool?
It was very funny, actually. The first conversation that I had when I arrived in Hartlepool was with the host for my accommodation. And completely unexpectedly, I'm Labour List editor, but I didn't say anything about this at all. But she complained that Dr. Paul Williams, the Labour candidate, had been selected not with a full process. So basically, they drew up a long list of one man, and then it was a short list of one, and there was no vote of local members. And she was annoyed by this, and she said, well, the town is not happy with this. Now, I doubt many people are going to know that. That's kind of a coincidence that I ran into this person as my first conversation. But there is that. I think they've taken a huge risk with that, because it wasn't a certain win in this by-election, very far from it. And the fact that they put all their eggs in one basket, literally, by just directly selecting Dr. Paul Williams, I think, you know, that was a big risk and it didn't need to be made. The other thing is that just talking to people in Hartlepool generally, almost everyone said they were annoyed that neither of the two main candidates were actually from Hartlepool. And you can point out to them that Dr. Paul Williams was only representing Stockton South, which is almost a neighbouring constituency, and it's only like 8 miles down the road. But they very much feel like they get forgotten in Hartlepool, and that was very important to them.
And presumably that 8 miles matters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of them very much said, what does he want with Hartlepool, when they kicked him out of Stockton? A bit like they kind of felt like they were getting our sloppy seconds from the Labour Party.
And what about the other parties, the Lib Dems particularly? Is there any chance of perhaps some sort of interest from them. Everyone else seems to be polling at very low numbers. And have they all given up? Is it simply, in terms of campaigning, when you're up there, a two-horse race? Do you just see posters for Conservative or Labour? Or perhaps Reform UK makes an appearance?
Nobody mentioned Reform UK or the Lib Dems. They didn't come up at all. What did come up is the fact that there were lots of independents standing. A lot of people mentioned, you know, oh, we've got 16 candidates. There's so many to choose from. And again, lots of people said, well, you know, neither Labour nor Tory are from Hartlepool, but there are a couple of independents who are. One guy said, you know, there's that bloke who runs the pub down on the marina and all that kind of thing. So they knew those people, but they're very much aware that, you know, basically they don't have a chance. I mean, it will be interesting to see whether Thelma Walker, who obviously used to be a Labour MP and lost her seat and then quit the Labour Party and wanted to run as the Northern Independence Party candidate, but they, you know, they didn't manage to register in time or whatever. It will be interesting to see whether she gets any kind of significant vote.
There's been a lot of discussion, of course, in the media over the last couple of weeks about the cut through that stories such as the decoration of Downing Street, the inappropriate lobbying, the accusations of cronyism, et cetera, have had. When you were up in Hartlepool, did anyone mention those specific instances to you, or was it largely about broader narratives?
It was about broader narratives. Nobody brought them up themselves, but when prompted, they knew exactly what I was talking about. But they mostly seem to make a bit of a joke out of it. One person said, you know, some people are fuming with him about the wallpaper. I don't care. Would the Queen be any different? And I love her. So it was that, either humour or it was kind of saying, well, look, what do we expect from politicians? This is just how they work. It was very much deep cynicism that I heard in response to that. And it seemed like those Tory sleaze stories had reflected on the whole of Westminster rather than the Conservatives in particular.
Yes, which is what comes across most often in the polling as well, that that it's a plague on all your houses rather than a specific party or individual that suffers. So looking wider beyond simply Hartlepool now and to all the other contests that are taking place, come Less Super Friday, as we're calling it, out of the main parties, who do you think will be happiest once the dust settles?
I think from what we know at the moment, and certainly what polling indicates, it's the Conservatives that are going to be most happy. As much as they've convinced the electorate this is not the case, they have been in power for over a decade now. And it looks like they're going to hold on to the West Midlands mayoralty with Andy Street and the Tees Valley. Certainly, they seem to be way ahead. Possibly might be gaining a parliamentary seat in a by-election. I mean, the West of England will be an interesting one. That's a three-way marginal last time. It's kind of Labour's best bet of a gain. And there's also West Yorkshire, where Tracy Brabin, the Labour candidate, might be the first female Metro mayor. But really, Labour should be expecting better gains than that at this point. So I do think it's the Tories who are going to be most happy if those results pan out in the way that they're predicted to.
In London, we have, of course, Count Binface, who has attracted a lot of attention. Hartlepool has the incredible Flying Brick running for the Monster Raving Loony Party. Do you have a particular favourite independent candidate up in Hartlepool?
I don't, up in Hartlepool. I mean, as I say, Thelma Walker is going to be an interesting one. I have a least favourite in Hartlepool. I think we can say safely that the one who, you know, he's been convicted of a sexual assault is certainly far from a favourite one. And there are questions about whether he should be allowed to run. So that's something that people have been talking about.
Sienna, in London, Labour are obviously expected to dominate. Does it really matter what the end result is, providing Sadiq Khan wins? Is there an important distinction between him winning on the first round or winning on the second round? Or really, is it just going to be spun as a very positive result for Labour, regardless of what happens?
I think that the latter. I mean, it will be interesting to see whether Sadiq Khan wins on first preferences this time. He probably won't, but will come very close. That seems to be what most of the polling says. And that will be something that Labour activists look out for. But I think, you know, some of the more interesting things that have happened in the London mayoral race, which, you know, broadly has been pretty boring, apart from laughing at Sean Bailey's terrible campaign. I mean, Sadiq Khan has talked about, you know, rent controls and setting up a drugs commission with a focus on decriminalisation of cannabis. I mean, he doesn't actually have the power to implement either of those policies. So it has all been quite abstract and odd, this mayoral race. And then we have candidates pulling out of debates as well. So I think most people will be looking at, you know, how badly does Lawrence Fox do? Does he do worse than Count Binface? Because that's going to be something to cheer up Labour activists this weekend, if so.
So it's the all important Binface versus Fox contest that that we'll really be having our attention.
That's what I think. Yeah, just a bit of fun, you know.
Yes, you heard it here first. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us, and do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podopods.com.